Nah, I don't.
There's a couple. There's a couple. There's
if
couple,
it ain't football, yeah, don't ask me.
There's a couple. There's a couple, man. I think Nike again, like you said, like the football through the years.
There was
like
the basketball one. Doof, doof.
So like even that one, okay, let me speak about that one, right? So the reason why Nike done that advert was because
hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the digital marketing manager, Aya. Aya, how you doing, bro? Welcome to the show.
How you doing, bio man? I'm good. It's good to be here, man.
Good to have you. We like to start with a little icebreaker.
Yeah.
What did you want to be growing up?
This is interesting. So I thought I'd be like a pro athlete on the side and then like an engineer. So it was nothing to do okay. With marketing. Like I'd done basketball at like a decent level. I'd done athletics at a decent level. So I thought, I'd do that. And then obviously like if I had to work kind of like to sustain myself, I'd like be an engineer and fix cars because okay. It seemed cool.
All right. So wanted to be an athlete, was potentially going to fix cars, has fallen into digital marketing.
Yeah.
Kind of talk me through your journey to this point.
Yeah, sure. So obviously just traditional, like typical. I'm Nigerian, as you can tell by my name. So there was no choice. Like I kind of had to go college. I had to go uni. So at college, I studied business. I studied economics. And I found it really cool just learning at like what makes a business profitable, what is a business and kind of how it runs. So I went to uni, I was like, right, okay, cool. Well, the sports thing, like not really getting money at the moment. So let me just go to uni and still do sports on the side. So I was thinking about what course I wanted to do. And I was just like, well, business, right? Like it's just a course. But I think through university that kind of puts you in areas to think about various different aspects of business, whether it's sales, HR, whether it's accounts, finance, so many different things. And I just started to really enjoy marketing whilst I was at uni. I enjoyed economics as well. Like a lot of my modules that I chose were marketing or economics modules. And that's kind of where I found my passion for marketing.
Okay, nice. And then following university, did you go straight into marketing? And if you did, like what kind of role was it?
Yeah, so I did not go straight into marketing. Okay. I kind of was like a lot of people where it's just like, yeah, I've got this degree and this paper like guarantees me open doors. Mm. So you come out of university and you kind of like think, oh, let me go and apply for all these jobs. And they automatically say, no, you don't have an experience. So I had to kind of go a longer way around. So I worked in sales for a bit.
Okay.
That was really interesting. It kind of taught me that the relationship with sales and marketing. And then I'd done like a few kind of internships like here and there in organizations that were not for profit, small organizations where I could go in, kind of run their social media, run their website and build some level of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Also on top of that, I'd done a Chartered Institute of Marketing course in digital marketing as well.
Oh, sick.
So yeah, like I was always like, so when the door was slammed in my face, I didn't take it as a, oh, like I'm going to run away and do something else. Mm. I just kept on battering down the door eventually till I got a full-time professional role in marketing.
Okay, sick. And just going back to a couple of the things that you said there. So the internships that you did, were they paid or were you doing it off your own back?
So a lot of the time they were not paid. So like I'd start off and it'd not be paid. So I'd be working like part-time sales in a phone shop or in different like knock door down kind of sales or whatever. And that would kind of sustain me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd do that part-time and I'd commit to doing like 2 days part-time in an organization.
Nice.
So that way, like I was always sustained and I was living at home. I'm not like my bills and like whatever I was paying wasn't like massive,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the time it was unpaid. And then I think that after a while we got to the point where it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like I need to, yeah, be confident enough to go in there and like, I know what I'm doing, like I need something. So I think by the time I kind of was doing it for a year, just over a year, I'd be getting travel money, contributions towards lunch, all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
So I'd kind of just use that to buy my travel card for like, obviously like all the jobs that I was doing over the month.
Yeah.
But then also at the same time, like sustain myself food and lunch and all that other stuff.
Okay, amazing. And then You spoke about the diploma you did. Was that a free diploma? Was that, no. Did you have to pay for that?
Yes, I had to pay for that. So I didn't even have the money. Like, it was crazy. So it was one of those ones where, like, do you know what? Like, do I really want to do this? And I was like, yeah, I do. And again, it's like kicking down the door effectively. So like, I had to like basically agree to finance and I'd pay monthly for the course.
Mm-hmm. How much was it? Just for those who potentially might want to do this.
Yeah, so I think at the time I was paying about 100, 200 quid a month.
Okay.
For 2 years.
Oh, wow. So about 5K.
Again, yeah. I think there's a lot of courses now, which it's a bit different now. So there's a lot of courses that it's like a buy now, pay later. So what you can do is they'll start charging you when you start to earn.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I think, level four government apprenticeship schemes that kind of have that approach where it's like, oh, you either earn whilst you learn, mm-hmm. or you can do kind of boot camp style where you will study and then they'll help you find a job, or you find the job and then you start paying once you start working.
That's actually pretty sick. And yeah. I think I've said it on the podcast before, and I know I probably sound like a broken record, there's no bigger investment that you can make in yourself.
100%.
And I think what I like about what you've done there is the fact that you thought outside the box, and yeah. you're like, I can't necessarily fund this now, but I'm going to back myself and I'm going to figure that out later.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'd say like, yeah, just know what the starting salary is, because you don't want to invest it 5K in a job or in a career and then the starting salary is like pennies.
Yeah, again, yeah, of course.
You're gonna find it really difficult. So that's something I definitely looked at, like, okay, well, if I was to do this, like, what would my starting salary be, and kind of what's the career progression for me, mm-hmm. and where can I take this to in like 5-10 years?
Okay, so with that, then you get a job in as a digital marketer. For the listener, how would you define the role of digital marketing?
So it's funny, I didn't even start in digital marketing. I started just basic marketing, bottom of the chain, the guy that...
So there's a difference, first of all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's marketing difference. And then there's digital marketing.
Yeah, so within the marketing function, within a business, there's various different types of specialisms. You know, okay. You have events, you have like people that do strictly social media. Mm-hmm. You have people who do digital, which can mean multiple different things, which could mean social media, it could be website, it could be CRM.
Okay. And CRM then just, stands for customer relationship management.
There you go. And then again, you have other people who are like more content heavy. So there'd be like more like written documents, yeah. whether that's social media or white papers or longer form content, blogs. And then you have people who do product. So product marketing managers, yeah. who basically like work within an organization, define the product and kind of how we speak about the product and how we promote the product. So
I don't know why I said is digital marketing all of marketing, because I know this. I've got all of these. Yeah. As you said that, I was like, this sounds yeah. like sounds like so, my company.
yeah. So like I always say this, luckily for me, I started like right at the bottom of the chain, like the guy who kind of got the grunt work within the marketing team, mm-hmm. Which kind of showed me two things, really. It showed me kind of where do my passions lie in terms of like what do I enjoy doing, what I don't enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. But it gave me a good experience of everyone else's role, because I'd done everyone else's grunt work, which meant that when I then progressed in my career, I knew how to work well with my colleagues who weren't within my specialism, because I had a knowledge of their specialism as well. And also, if I had to cover, or there's times where you kind of chip in and do other bits, I was more than comfortable to do them.
Okay, so you've mentioned the specialisms of like the different marketing departments there. Mm-hmm. In terms of the digital marketer,
yeah,
can you talk me through like what a typical day or week would look like?
Yeah, so I think for me, it starts a lot with kind of retrospectively looking at what you've previously done, whether it's campaigns, last week's social media, and reporting on that. So I think one of the things I love about my role is very analytical, it's very data driven. It's not just a science as it is, like, you know, you whack some crazy things together that looks cool, but you always want to understand like why things are working. Why mm-hmm. did that campaign work? Why didn't it work? What can we learn from it? What can we do? So I think that's kind of where you normally start at the top end of the week. And then again, learning and looking at what other business priorities there are at the moment, you know, what products are you trying to push at the moment? What clients are you trying to attract? What clients are, you know, possibly leaving? Is there anything that we can do in that space to support them? Mm-hmm. Looking, yeah, like what support the sales need, you know, whether it's material, whether it's they're going to an event and they want to know how to talk about it or promote it through social media. You know, looking at our digital real estate, which includes our website, you know, like in a physical environment, your shop is, you know, where you sell from. For a digital environment, that's your website. So mm-hmm. again, is there anything on the website that's broken? Is there anything that we could put on there to improve, you know, the customer journey and the way people interact with us online? Same for social media as well.
Sounds like a lot. With everything you've just said there, how do you prioritize what you're working on like a week or month or quarter?
So this is one of the major skills I think that you have to have as a marketeer. You have so many stakeholders. You know, you've got sales team saying that, oh, we need this collateral now. Right. You've got the product team saying that, oh, you know, we've just changed our product and we don't sell that anymore. We want to sell it this way and we want to talk about it this way. And then again, you just have your general marketing needs, which is, oh, like, is the website up and running? We want to do some social media. We want to promote some other stuff that we're doing within the organization. Mm-hmm. So when you have many stakeholders, prioritization is such an important element to have within this role. And I think for me, like, I coin it as ruthless prioritization, like what needs to be done and what needs to be done now, what needs to wait and what needs to be stricken off.
Okay.
And I think that by having an open approach to that within the organization allows you to do those things. I think working in organizations where you don't have a senior stakeholder, so you don't have a chief of marketing who could basically say to everyone else in the business that the marketing team's very busy right now, we've already agreed to a lot of things and we're not taking anything more. If you don't have that person to kind of be the shield, then basically all the crap will just get dumped on you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have that, it helps. But also at the same time, there's so many project management tools that are really helpful, you know, like Monday, Trello, and looking at the team, like, right, what can we deliver on a 2-week sprint, you know, and crossing things off as they're being done. That's one thing. And I think, say, the final thing is it has to always tie into the business's overall objectives.
Yeah.
Right, a lot of the time people have these crazy ideas and they're great, but if they don't tie into the company's objectives,
why are we doing it,
are we spending time, why are we spending money on it?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time I think that if you had that approach to, you know, marketing, to prioritizing, then a lot of the things that you are doing and a lot of things you prioritize will just be instantly stricken off or deprioritized.
Very well said. As you were speaking there, I think something that came to my mind, have you always worked in-house and what's your view on like marketing agencies? Because I work in tech and a lot of companies and brands that I work with, they seem to outsource some of their initiatives to different agencies.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about that?
I've always worked in-house. Mm-hmm. I've considered working for agencies. I've just never had the opportunity. It's normally very split. Reason being is because the experience that you require for both are very different.
Mm-hmm.
So for agency, you're very, very specific in your job role. So it wouldn't just be digital. You'd be a paid ad specialist or a CRM specialist or a web optimization specialist. Whereas I'm more of a digital generalist. I can do kind of all those things to various different degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I think also what you find is it's down to organizational size and budget. So like I've worked mainly in startups and scale-ups. They don't have the budget necessarily to hire an individual, but they need the work done. Mm. So if they can have an agency with an SLA agreement, like service level agreement, 2 hours a week, 3 hours a week, it comes in a lot cheaper. So like an SLA agreement for, you know, someone to do your CRM probably be $1,000 a week, maybe even less than that, $1,000 a month, depends on how many hours you need. Whereas if you hire a specialist in that space, you got to think about time to hire, how much it's going to cost to find the right person, the opportunity cost if it doesn't work, it might take 6 to 12 months for them to get onboarded, and you got to probably pay them like 35 to 50K, right?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's like if I actually have this agency who are just committed to do this piece of work, whether it's for a couple of months or whether it's, you know, for a long period of time, it often works out cheaper and they're often a lot more specialized in what they do and how they can kind of work alongside you.
That makes sense. I'm very clear on that now. Thank you. How do you go about creating a buyer persona and tailoring your marketing efforts to reach your target audience?
Wow, this is a great question. Like, and I've just started a new role at a tech consultancy now, and it's something that I'm grateful that they actually done it before I came. it takes a collaborative effort. You have to work with products and you have to work with sales. Mm-hmm. So again, product, why does this product exist? And who is this product for? And then with sales, who are you talking to on a daily basis? When you overlay that with marketing intel, so who's going to the website? Who do we follow on social media? Who's interested in what we're putting out there? You kind of get this mesh of what you would be. It would be early doors personas, effectively. And then again, you just continue to hammer down and drill that down, whether it's, oh, our product is for, you know, a CTO, our product's for, you know, a CDO. We know that it's really chief, like really senior level. And then you'd build that maybe downwards or build it upwards. So, okay, well, who reports into that person? What other people can we reach? What are they interested? What are their pain points? Mm-hmm. So again, a lot of the time, and this is where organizations don't get it right, is like marketing would do personas by themselves and not speak to products or sales. Mm. Or sales would do them and not speak to marketing and product, or product would do them and not speak to... And then what you have is every department has a different persona. So every department's efforts are going to different people. When you have a collaborative approach, you can now sit down and discuss and create various different personas and target them through various different activities from all the different teams.
What I'm taking from that is, in order to get the best result when it comes to creating a persona, you need to collaborate from the jump with the various stakeholders. Yes. From the other business division.
Yes, it has to be a collaborative approach, because again, and one thing I'll say about marketing is, because we're not customer facing in a lot of aspects, like I sit behind my desk, whether it's in the office or at home, and I'm taking information in from the people that speak to the customer, whether it's the product team or consultants who are, you know, with the customers, or the sales team who are trying to get sales and business and opportunities, cross-selling, all those other things. So I'm mm-hmm. taking intel in. So my intel might not necessarily be accurate. So if I don't corroborate my intel with other people, then it can possibly be incorrect and skewed. Mm. So when you are collaborating, you'll find that there are commonalities which you can draw from and build from. And then there's things that aren't, which you probably just discard.
One thing that's coming to mind again, when you're building a persona or like you're positioning, I suppose, a product, have you ever just got it wrong? And how quickly can you, and how quickly do you rectify it? Because sometimes it might be, oh, give it time till it's like statistically significant. Mm. How quickly can you, you know, spot when, okay, yeah, we might have missed the tone here, we need to switch things up?
So I'll say this, like, being a good marketeer doesn't absolve you from getting things wrong. Mm. Like, I think people say all the time, it's about failing quick and learning fast. So I've had it before where, like, I've set up a paid campaign and... Yeah, this is actually a real scenario. Yeah, I set up a paid campaign at a new organization. They only operate in certain markets. So I think like EU Big Five. So like the UK, Spain, France, Germany, Italy, right? Mm-hmm. And again, still being onboarded, haven't really checked. So I've just turned the campaign on. So again, from the business perspective, we're spending money and we're getting leads and we're getting interest, but we don't serve business in that area. So it's pointless. So from a surface level, it looks like, oh yeah, the campaign's bubbling, you know, people are interested, you know, people are taking actions. But then again, is that are those the correct people? No, it's not. So, and this is where, again...
So just to be clear, you were serving people outside of the EU Big Five.
Exactly.
When the goal was to serve people in the
inside
Big Five.
The Big Five, okay, yeah. Cool. So when I look at examples like that, it's like, hey, well, I've missed a trick by, I haven't asked and I haven't been told. But also at the same time, it's, okay, this necessarily might not be a bad idea. Mm-hmm. However, it gives us intel as to if we were to expand outside the EU Big Five.
This is what we can expect.
This is what we could do. Yeah. So again, it wasn't the purpose of the objective of the campaign. But the way I'd look at it is, okay, well, we turn it off. But what are the takeaways? The takeaways is, okay, miscommunication here. However, in the future, if we ever look to expand, we have small intel in pockets of areas where we've been able to get some leads, but also at the same time, we know where our product resonates a bit more.
Okay. And just on that as well, you've spoken about that one that didn't necessarily go so well. Could you share a successful digital marketing campaign or initiative that you've worked on and walk through the strategy and tactics that led to its success?
Yeah, sure. So it's not solely like digital marketing, but I had the opportunity of working with the Bank of England on the accessible £10 note. Okay. So like years, not years ago, but like, yeah, when they gave us the new funny money that everyone was throwing away. But yeah, I had the privilege of working for a not-for-profit at the time in the disability space. And the Bank of England were doing some really good work kind of around disability awareness. So people don't know, but basically all the notes are all different sizes. And they all have Braille readings on them, right? And this is because people who are visually impaired are able to tell the money differently, right? So I don't know if anyone's ever watched like Daredevil or whatever. Like, again, like the classic way of doing it was they would fold their notes differently. Yeah, so like with the newer money, not only is it cleaner and all the other stuff that they promoted, however, for people who are visually impaired, with the Braille reading and the size of the notes, it was so much easier for them to actually use money and to do day-to-day stuff like, you know, take money out from cash point, pay for items, store money, all those other kind of things. Because again, it's not moving away from a cash-based system, but how do we make things a lot more accessible? So for that campaign, once it was launched, we helped create collateral, which, you know, was stored in the bank and other banks around, some online resources, social media posts. Got to record a podcast with the chief cashier at the time. So the woman that signed, like, whose like signature's on the note, which was really cool.
Oh, wow.
But then again, like, it was also like all the email stuff around it. So we had a very vast, like, senior leadership database of senior leaders kind of in the D&I space, also who were like very big champions for disability awareness. So again, working with them, creating email content and events around it. So again, it wasn't just digital, it's the whole holistic marketing piece kind of around it. But it was great, man. Podcast was really interesting because again, it showed the holistic approach to kind of disability awareness. So like things that they'd done kind of in the building and for their staff. And yeah, there was a lot not only that we could learn from as consumers and people who use banking day to day and cash day to day, but also like what is the best practice around this look like for an employer. So it was really, really good. It was like really good to pull out like some key stuff and kind of raise the awareness out there for both obviously organizations, but you know, us as day to day users.
How long did that project take?
It was funny, man, because a part of it, I was in Ibiza, which was hilarious. I was in Ibiza. I remember on the day I was coming back, and I was just there, like waiting for my flight, like just chilling in the hotel, just on my phone, responding to emails, just like praying that nothing had like broken or gone wrong. So you're looking about that was like probably about a six month thing.
And for me, like, I always like to ask the question, when you have like a project, what is it that marks it as finished, right? Because you speak about all of these different things that you've done.
Yeah.
How do you say, okay, job done, we've reached enough people, on to the next one?
I don't ever believe that the job is ever fully done because content is still out there, right? So that piece of content is still somewhere, you know, on the internet, people are still listening to it and watching it, I hope, right? However, when you start a project, you will set KPIs and OKRs as to like, especially when you're working with brands, right? So, you know, if we're working and partnering with the Bank of England and we're saying we're going to do all this stuff and raise their profile and all this kind of stuff, how do you measure that, right? So it has to be mutually beneficial. It has to be, oh yeah, like you guys have got loads more viewers on your website and loads more people interested in what you're doing, and you're able to partner with many other organizations in this space, and there's proof and evidence for that. And obviously for us, like, we can see our social media go up, we can see, you know, new business and various other things come in. So there's always going to be some form of KPI or OKR around the reason why you're doing the campaign to tie it back to, and the metrics that actually prove or disprove the success of it.
Okay, great. And it's good that you've started to mention metrics and stuff there, because I know data plays a crucial role in digital marketing.
Yes.
How is it that you use data and analytics to refine and optimize your campaigns?
Perfect. So basically, when I first started in marketing was... It was an art, right? Like, people would create this like amazing content and it would go viral and everyone's like, ah, like, how did that happen, right? And that, we're talking about the age of, even before like I kind of started to work in marketing, but like, you're talking about the age of like, so why did Soulja Boy go viral, right? I think what you've seen over the years is the increase of data and analytics turning marketing from an art into a science. where it's like you try and draw similarities and insight from things that are comparable, right? So it's like, for example, if I have a brand that sells sneakers, you are my competitor and you have a brand that sells sneakers, I want to be able to have the same amount of followers as you, to be able to get the same amount of business, same turnover. So again, you draw metrics from that, right? How many followers do you have? How many followers do you get a month? How many likes, how many shares, how many retweets? Because social media will have all the information. So if I'm emerging in this industry, I want to come into this industry, I have to know that. So I know how to build a social media strategy that gets us to there, right? But then also on a baseline kind of campaign level, what you are taught in digital marketing as well, that is metrics that matter effectively, mm-hmm. whether it's social media, whether it's website, whether it's, you know, CRM, there are certain metrics that matter. They're the baseline, like the bread and butter. This has to like go this way or this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by doing that and knowing what those are, you can kind of create a foundation of success.
As you're talking, I'm just like, damn, do I need to do that for this podcast? Because I'm like, yeah, I can see.
You should.
Like, I have metrics that I'm monitoring, but for me, sometimes when I'm looking at like social media and strategy, the one thing I know is I need to be consistent.
Yeah.
But you know, I when we talk about like data, I think about and turn it into a science. Think about Mr. Beast, and everybody knows like Mr. Beast's story and how he. He studies all of his YouTube videos. He looks at all of the data and he's like constantly refining the little things. And that's why pretty much every new video he releases breaks the record for like most views outside of like a music video within X amount of time. But sometimes when I'm looking at my videos, I don't know, I'm not like, okay, here's the data, but I don't know what to draw from that. Do you know what I mean?
No, so, definitely.
How do you know what to draw from it, I suppose? Is it your degree which has helped you with that? Is it time in the industry? For somebody who is looking to become analytical, I suppose, what would your advice be to them?
I think you mentioned a few things, whether it's, you know, my degree or time in the industry. I think I'd be able to draw on a few things because the space that we operate in, the space that you're talking about, is a space that changes every week, right? What was viral last year is not going to be viral this year, right? So again,
does it really matter like what time you post as well?
Yeah, it does, because again, like there's times where people are more likely to use their phone and then they're not, right? So like for example, like in the B2B space, we try and hit people at certain times, on your way to work, on your lunch break, and on your way home. I don't want to think about work when I first woken up. I don't want to think about work when I'm in back-to-back meetings, so I'm not going to be on my social media.
Yeah.
At lunchtime, I'm probably going to be checking my phone, and if something interesting pops up, I'll have a look at it. On my way home, I'm still thinking about work because I can't just switch off.
Yeah.
But the moment I get home, I'm probably not going to work or be that interested in being sold to or being informed about anything. So I also operate a policy like in the B2B space, nothing on the weekend. Because again, it's like, that's people's personal time. So if you hit people on the weekend and it's not something that they're expecting or they want to see, then it's just not going to go down well in a lot of ways, right? But yeah, like it's a multitude of things. And I think that you have to know when to compare to others and when to stand alone. Sometimes I think the competition is just yourself, right? How do I get more listens than last month? How do I get more followers than last month? Okay, cool. These are the top three or four like pieces of content. These are the top three or four like podcasts. Like, what do they have in common? What don't they have in common? You know, where was it the time I posted the content? Is it the content that was discussed? Is it the type of job that was discussed? Is it like someone naturally more charismatic than someone else? Like, these are the things you have to consider, because then it's like, okay, well, actually, I know that if I post at this time, and I have someone with this level of charisma and this level of experience talking about this industry, it's generally, it probably will be better. Again, it's not ever going to be 100% accurate, but at the same time, you're playing probabilities here with obviously calculated guesswork through good data, good analytics, good insight.
If you see a change in the page, don't leave me. Just and by the way, click like and subscribe and comment if you've gotten this far in the podcast. Okay.
That helps.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Content marketing is a significant component of digital marketing. Can you share your approach to content creation, distribution, and measuring its impact on like a brand that you work with?
This is rapidly changing because of the rate in which we consume content, right? So again, let's go back 20 years ago, right? Infrared phone, latest music. That was how we used to consume content, right? Mm. We used to consume content when you'd go to the ICT lesson, someone had like broken through the computer's lock or whatever and gone on YouTube. That's how we consumed content, right? Our phones didn't have that much data. You know, we shared what we could and everyone didn't have like the internet in their palm. Everyone's got the internet in their palm with a wider range and age of people, right? The amount of content that's needed to generate traction, brand awareness, sales is a lot more, right? And again, it's everyone's doing it, so there's a lot more distractions. So again, when you look at content and content strategy, your content has to be able to speak to someone on a human level whilst giving a nod to what you actually do. Mm. It's that simple. So like, I think at the moment, one piece that's doing the rounds is... The Norwich Football Club.
Yeah, the mental health.
Right, because again, it's personal. It speaks to that experience as someone going to football, being around someone in a familiar setting and never having a conversation past the setting that you're in, right? And it speaks to them on so much human level. But again, everything, like every single slide or video in that has Norwich's branding in it.
Yeah.
No one speaks about that. But also at the same time, you know, the promotion of football and the promotion of the championship, so many things, it's giving a nod to like who they actually are, but they're speaking about something on a human level. And again, like it's great that they're raising awareness about mental health, but at the same time, that has definitely given them the most amount of social media traffic they've ever received in mm-hmm. their like history as a club.
Okay, it's great that you mentioned Norwich there. I'm going to give an example and then I want to ask you, like, what is your favourite ever campaign? For me, it has to be Nike and it's the Nike football adverts where they did like the first person, like they started in Sunday League, get scouted by Arsene Wenger, he stripes up for Arsenal, and then like he ends up playing at the World Cup. But it's like every match you had, one match he's up against Rooney, one match he's up against Ronaldo, Van Persie, and they were able to get all of the different Nike athletes into the advert. And when they used to do those, it used to blow my mind. And even to this day, you know, I remember that. And there's Pepsi as well who did something similar.
Yep.
I think football and like, bringing a lot of stars together have really had an impact on me.
Yeah.
Are there any
Do you know what? I'm going to speak about one of the most iconic adverts ever done. If I say Coca-Cola's coming, what do you think of?
Coca-Cola's coming?
Yeah. Christmas.
I think Christmas, yeah.
Yeah. And that is like, that is content and that is advertising. Mm. It's like Coca-Cola has synonymously attached themselves to Christmas.
Mm.
Like, think about how wild that is. Like, if you did not see a Coca-Cola's come in Christmas advert, everyone would be like, where's the advert? What's going on? And it's crazy because they've been running the same advert basically for like 20, 30 years.
Mm.
It's so wild like to think that like a brand has basically like attached themselves to a public holiday where it's like, like it's not really Christmas if there's no like Coca-Cola's come in. And I think it's that level, like I think there's other ads as well where it's like Cadbury's, I think I've got a few at that level as well. Like Phil Collins and Phil Collins, the gorilla.
Nah, I don't know.
There's a couple.
If it ain't football, don't ask me.
There's a couple, man. I think Nike, again, like you said, like the football through the years.
There was
like
the basketball one.
So like even that one, okay, let me speak about that one, right? So the reason why Nike done that advert was because And One had taken so much of their market share.
Really?
Yep. Wow. So what they actually done is they just threw loads of money and just not rebranded, but they basically created a division of Nike Basketball called Nike Streetball. So they basically copied like a lot of And1 stuff, just threw money at it and made it better.
If you can't beat them, outspend them.
Yeah. And then yeah, like Nike have done that in a couple of adverts, in a couple of ways, like the Jonga Benito stuff.
Yeah.
Which actually like just went viral, like the whole like Brazil versus France.
It was just Brazil, yeah, like, and then their changing room. Yeah.
Again, it's just like all those little things. And this is the thing, it's like having, I always call it like content demon. So like I have an overarching theme, whether it's Christmas or Coca-Cola and Santa Claus, right? And I just rinse it.
Okay, so on that, you know, you've spoken a lot about Coca-Cola there, you mentioned Cadbury's. When you're working on, you know, campaigns and content, like, are you drawing inspiration on things of the past? Are you coming up with these ideas yourself? How is it you develop, I suppose, your strategies?
Yeah, I think the best ideas come through collaboration. So I think throughout my career, that's one thing I've learned, like work closely with the sales team, their customer focus, work closely with the product team because they know the product the best, right? Mm-hmm. And I think through having those conversations, that's when it's literally like I'm just sitting there in the meetings and then light bulbs are just going off. It's a bit different because again, I work in the B2B space. So a lot of the time I'm not coming up with like Coca-Cola's coming adverts, but it's more, how do I find creative ways to speak about our products on a our products and service on a human level, right? Whether that's going to be like, okay, how does our brand add value to you or your brand? How do we make your life easier? How do we make your job easier? And then often what you find is all these ideas fit into an overarching theme, right? So for example, in tech at the moment, the conversation is AI. Is it good? Is it bad? Right? There's a lot of content you can write about that because a lot of people are using AI in very different ways, right? From, you know, kind of basic level ChatGPT to like, oh, like, are they fully going to take everyone's job in like the next year, 2 years, right? To, oh, actually, this has actually created a lot of jobs for people, right? People who are like now, if you look at Gen AI, before you'd need like loads of money and loads of data scientists, which are very expensive to create something like that. Now you've just got like LLMs and like loads of things that you can kind of just draw data from and actually just use, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone has access to ChatGPT. So now everyone actually could be a content creator or everyone can actually write a 3,000 word essay like this, right? So again, it's like, how do I theme pieces of content and actually find the true stories that get people passionate or get people wanting to talk?
Mm-hmm. But nothing beats the real thing, I'm just going to say. So for all of like AIs, you know, ChatGPT is great and I use ChatGPT. Yeah. I wouldn't say I use it like daily, but if there's something that I don't know, like the other day I was in the office at work and somebody wanted to know whether that, like, they had lunch and they wanted to know whether their food was okay to eat because the fish had gone off a day earlier. Oof. And we were having a massive debate in the office. I was like, let me just start ChatGPT. But
this is the thing though. It's interesting because you look at it now where it's like, you would have had the scenario, right? You know, when you're at work and like, if you're like a Windows-based organization, everything's in SharePoint. Well, what if you had like a ChatGPT specifically for your workplace that just found you the correct document that you need for a client?
We've almost got something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
again,
great.
So like, again, this is where like, again, it's the iteration of Google. Everything was Google before, right? Everything's now going to be AI because again, it's going to pull from a wider data source and present you data in a more structured and a better way, right? Everyone before would be like, oh, Google, Ask Jeeves or whatever. Like, oh,
Ask Jeeves who? But you're right.
What's the meaning of a nucleus? And you know, you go right down to your homework, right? But now it's like, okay, cool. Like, to what level do I want this information and how do I want it structured? Do I want a tweet? Do I want a blog? Do I want my 3,000 word assignment that's due tomorrow, right? So again, do I want a business report? And this is where like the iterations are going. So it's super interesting to see kind of how it affects all industry. But again, it's definitely going to affect marketing as a whole.
Just ChatGPT, if you're listening, all seeing, all being, just don't take my job, okay? No, I'm messing around. How do you allocate your digital marketing budget across various channels?
Oof.
And what factors influence these decisions?
A lot of the time it can be influenced by people's opinion. It shouldn't be, because again, it's just like someone in the business who you know, sits on the treasure chest effectively is like, oh, I heard that this is good and we should do this. It's like, no, there's no actionable data behind that. It's just an opinion. So a lot of things that I base my budget selections on, you know, ROI, return on investment, and ROAS, ROAS, return on ad spend.
Yeah.
So like those are the things that I'm actively looking at. Again, there's other metrics and it depends what the overall OKR of a platform is, you know, or the OKR of a campaign is. You know, if it's just brand awareness, then there might not be like an initial like return on investment, but you're looking at, you know, have your website visits gone up, you know, people more people following or more people sharing, commenting, engaging. You're looking at engagement kind of thing. You're looking at, you know, oh, sales team, like, have you had any more conversations about this specific thing because we're talking about it more on social media? Are you looking at those things? But when you're looking at spend, especially kind of my level, and as you get more senior in marketing, it has to look, it has to be like, there has to be a business value in there. Like you have to be able to go to the board or your CEO and be like, right, we spent 20,000 on a new website and now we're getting business twice as quick because people can navigate the website easier. When they speak to the sales team, you know, the sales team aren't wasting time on the fluff because the website clearly outlines our products and services and how much everything is going to cost, right? The board are going to be happy, C-suite are happy, because it's like, okay, you're, now we spent 20k, we're getting business quicker, let's reduce the amount of time it takes us to get business, we get more money in, cash flow is better. So everything that you do, it's like, okay, well, what am I getting back for my money? What am I getting back for the time of all the employees in this organization? And that's kind of what you tie it down to. And you have to be realistic, because a lot of the time, sometimes you might have a great idea and you want to spend money, but you don't have the resource to do it. So you have to factor that in. It's like time. Do I need to go and find an agency? Do we have the skills in-house? These are the things you're considering. So again, it's not just the actual money. It's also skills and time as well as the consideration you have to make, especially when you're not in, you know, a Bloomberg or a EY where there's like 200 people in a marketing team.
And unlimited budget.
Exactly.
And I suppose, has there ever been a situation where you've had an idea but you've not had the budget? And if there has been, how do you fight for that budget?
Ooh, welcome to the scale up environment, man. I've been in that position a lot of times, and I think that what I've learned is that like delay is not denial. And I've learned to always understand the viewpoint of the stakeholder, which is a lot of the time it's going to be the CMO, it's going to be the CEO. The business might not just have the money, right? If they don't have the money or that there's other business priorities, then we have to, I just have to forget it or do the light version, which is not as big as I originally thought. And I think that a lot of the time I pitch now, especially when it comes to projects or budgets, I'm coming with, this is the Hallmark version, the top of the line, like Waitrose. Then you got your kind of like, oh, this is the Tesco vibe, and then you got your Lidl, Aldi.
Okay.
And a lot of the time it's like, depending on obviously how much money is available and the value that's attributed to kind of each version, they will pick one. Like better best pricing, right? Again, if you go with one thing, it's a yes or no. If you go with multiple options, it's like, oh, I have the choice to pick and the liberty to pick, so I get to pick one. And I think that as I've kind of gone through my career and like the experience I've gained, it's better to have that approach as opposed to like, oh, I've pitched, they've said no, and like now I kind of like sulk and like just go back to writing social media posts.
So the takeaway from that is, yeah, if you get turned away, delay is not denial. And what you need to do maybe is be flexible with your vision. And be ready to compromise, because they might not be able to meet you at 100%, but they can meet you at 60%. And as long as you communicate to the business, hey, look, meeting me at 60%, it'll get you some results, but it's not going to get you what was promised at 100%. Being clear on that communication will, at least let the business know what they're getting into.
Yeah, definitely. And one word to like marketeers and potential marketeers, deliver value, right? So if the business is saying, oh, if the business is saying that, you know, we can't do the Waitrose version, take the Lidl version and make it the best Lidl version that you can make it, right? And then show the value that it's delivered and then leverage more, right? It's like, okay, well, if this has made us £1,000, right? And like, oh, we didn't invest that much into it, they're thinking, oh, well, if I put a bit more, like, how much more can we get out? It's just the nature of business, right? Exactly. If I put a little bit more, can I get more? And then again, that's how you kind of build up incrementally to the Tesco's and the higher versions. I think a lot of the time people just tap out and say, this is what it is, and just like keep it moving. It's like always push more, always push for effectively what we call best practice, always push for kind of what is better and what is the best.
Quite inspiring. I think I'm going to take that forward with some things I do in my day to day. I've got a really good one here. So I've seen this personally, but in the face of increasing privacy concerns and changes in online advertising regulations, how has your approach to digital advertising and data privacy evolved?
It's only going to get worse. Like, and I'll tell you that for a fact. Again, I don't work in the B2C space. So again, it's not like ASOS and whether you subscribe or not, and like them hammering you with emails like and discounts every like 3 days. But the concerns are with B2B, you're dealing with people who are working and professionals, right?
B2B is business to business, by the way. I know I've not clarified but just in case.
Thank you for clarifying that. So yeah, when you, B2B and B2G, business to government, a lot of the time, like you're trying to get behind a firewall of some organization. So again, you can't put like 10% off or best discount ever or Christmas offer because those things automatically get blocked, right? But also you're fighting for prominence in someone's like work email inbox. So again, like we've all done this, right? We've seen emails that come in, it's just like straight delete. Like this is not even, I'm not even going to open it, right? So again, the interesting thing I think businesses need to do and just do well is be clear and clean with your data. Like how often are you, you know, cleansing and cleaning your data? You know, do you have a data cleaning process, right? There's so many tools that you can use out there, right? So I'm like a HubSpot person, right? So within HubSpot, just set up a quick automation that says if someone's not engaged with our brand for 18 months, we just take them off. A lot of the time, the reason why people are engaged is because they don't care what you have to say or they're not ready to buy it. Just get rid of them. And like it's something that like I think...
But would you completely get rid of them, or would you call them off?
They're just not marketing contact, so you don't get billed. You don't get billed by your CRM provider, and you don't accidentally send them a marketing email for them.
But you might try and like win them back after like 36 months or something like that.
Yeah, so like you might have other engagements, so you might, you know, say to the sales team, hey, like we know this person's a persona two, they haven't responded to any emails. However, we know that they really need this product. Is there an event that you can invite them to? Do you want to invite them personally for lunch? Because we know that they're going through these kind of problems and our product solves those problems. There's other ways to kind of get in front of people. I think email is obviously one of the most impersonal that you can use in B2B or B2G rather. You're not going to just text someone randomly, right? And I think emails that kind of buffer, but then there's a lot more like kind of tailored personal approaches that, you know, if this person is, you know, a kind of MVP, like a, of like a really important person that, you know, you can really do business with, you might try the personal approach, take them to a really nice place. It wouldn't be me, it'd be sales, but take them to a really nice place and maybe like just have a conversation with them over lunch or breakfast or dinner. Right. But yeah, like I think Apple's approach as well. Apple blocks everything. Like I've worked in B2C spaces where, even when we have legitimate interest and the person has purchased a product, the emails are getting blocked, and it's a headache. But I think at the same time, it's about being open and transparent with individuals and saying, "Hey, we're trying to be compliant here. If you could please, like, you know, do your side of it as well." You know, accept things, make sure they're not in junk, keep them in your inbox, respond to things, subscribe. These are ways that kind of keep your database and your contacts healthy. If they're not managed well, that's, I think, when it goes into that unhealthy direction and it kind of messes up everything. I think as well, just staying abreast of what the new legislations are, and obviously, again, how they impact the systems, the data tools, data management tools that you use, right? Whether you're using Salesforce, whether you're using Marketeer, whether you're using HubSpot, like they all have their way and their processes of doing things. Like you should be very well aware of what those are, and have systems in place within the organization to kind of like negate and manage like things that could be detrimental.
I've heard you mention like a few different softwares there. I've heard you mention HubSpot, which I'm very familiar with. I've heard you mention like monday.com for project management. For anybody who's potentially looking to, you know, get into marketing, what would you say are like the key technologies that they might want to familiarize themselves with, and potentially Google or watch YouTube videos?
So just I'm gonna look into the camera and say this. So I didn't learn any of this stuff when I was studying. I learned this stuff like live through like my working experience and doing like internships and all this stuff. The core things that you'd need to know, right? So you need to know how to navigate and use WordPress and other CMSs. So they're content management systems. So they're the system that sits on the back end of the website. Mm-hmm. That's for you to create a web page, for you to upload pictures, content, text, all that kind of stuff. You need to have a working knowledge of CMSs. CRMs. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at HubSpot, you're looking at Salesforce, you're looking at Marketeo, and there are a few other ones out there, monday.com and other ones. Just have a, you don't need to, no one's saying that you need to know how to do everything, but a working knowledge. How do you import a contact? How do you create an email list? How do you send out a marketing email? Mm-hmm. MailChimp's another one that's very, very good to learn how to use. A lot of organizations use that. Mm-hmm. And there's a few others out there as well, campaign monitor and various other things. I think there's a whole other list of tools. For example, you know, you've got Google Tag Manager, which is really, really important if you want to go into the digital space. Having a working knowledge of Google Analytics, it helps as well. Like Data Studio, I can't remember if it's still called Data Studio, but basically like how do you kind of plug in loads of data sources and actually generate reports?
It might be Looker.
Yeah, it's Looker now, yeah. So again, it's like how do you... Yeah, how do you generate reports? I think a lot of the time that you can get bogged down in Excel creating reports, but if you use all these systems, they can automate your reports for you. So when you go into a meeting, you look really smart and really snazzy because you've got all these reports and these charts that mean a lot of things that people don't know, and then you get to explain them and then it makes you look great, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many tools out there. I think that for you, it's just understanding the working knowledge of the basic ones I just mentioned, mm-hmm. Like your Google ad system, your Facebook, your Meta ad system, your LinkedIn ad system. Like have a working knowledge of LinkedIn, especially for the B2B space. You know, it's the number one professional social media platform. So again, I think these are the things that you need. And when you are in an organization as well, and this goes out to marketeers who are working in organizations who want to upskill, want to grow, have a like a BD, like have a person within the organization. So I've got a person within LinkedIn, I've got a person within Google, I've got a person within Facebook. So again, when they're rolling out like all these new things, all these iterations of their platforms, you're the first to know. You know the implications on your business, you know the implications on your sector, because that will really, really help you always be kind of on the front foot of what's going on in your industry.
In the ever-evolving world of digital marketing, what trends and technologies are you most excited AI. About right now?
AI. Okay, simple. Hands down. Like, what if you do? We live in a world now where you don't have to write a social media post. Mm-hmm. I don't have to write a social media post. I can put in 3 hashtags and a statement and it will be created for me. So there's no excuse to not create content now, right? If I can go into certain AI tools, and I'm not going to name them, and I say I want a video highlighting our company's core values, and it creates me a 30-second video, what's my excuse not to create content? So especially in the space I work in, startups, scale-ups, you don't have the budget to have a 20-man marketing team, but now you have tools that can do the content generation for you. What are you going to do with that? And I think that's kind of what I'm looking at.
And are you worried about it taking your job when you talk
about it? No, not necessarily, because again, you're still going to need someone to create the strategy. Everything has to feed into the overarching strategy, right? Mm. What will be tough is people who want to work in small organizations, they're not going to have entry-level roles. They're just going to have SME, subject matter experts. So they'll have like a senior person, but no junior person under them. Mm. I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing, because me personally, with people in my industry, like I'll still do mentorship and still catch up and touch base with people. You might just have to go to a bigger company and fight for the position with the company. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think startups and scale-ups, although they are like account for like 70% of business in the UK, they kind of need someone to come in with a level of experience and do some things, do it quickly. It might not always be the best environment for someone who's kind of new to marketing, new to industry, to be in. Reason being, because things move so fast and it can be very high pressured. So I definitely, like, I'm excited to see what AI would do in marketing. I don't necessarily just think it's going to take someone's job. I think we still need to have that human approach, you know, telling stories and creating content that appeals to people. I don't think AI can do that yet.
I agree. I just like to ask the question.
I think AI, like, it has some jokes. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's funny and it's cool to use, but I think that we always kind of need that human approach. And whether that's strategy or analysis or whatever, like, it's always going to have a human behind it.
I get that. And talking about that human approach, what would you say first is, like, the most stressful thing about being a marketer?
Being a marketeer, again, you mentioned it earlier, is like the priority piece, right? There's so many pieces of content that you can write. There's so many projects that you can do. There's so many things that are going to be broken that you can improve, whether it's tools or the website or whatever. Which is the most important? Which one adds the most value? That is the kind of hardest thing, the most difficult thing, because everyone in the team and everyone in the organization has an opinion on it. Mm-hmm. So again, whether you're the like expert in it or not, you're going against people's opinions, whether it's, oh, like, my friend's a CEO here and this is how they're doing their marketing, or it's just, oh, like, yeah, we tried that last year and it didn't work, right? I think that's a challenge. Working in startups and scale-ups is, I think for me, and you'd find this in all departments, is creating processes that work and people are willing to stick to. I think that startups and scale-ups were really good at, like, doing good work and just being agile and being quick and working in scrums and nodes and teams and getting things done. But there's no process. There's no retro looking back as, why did that work? And how do we create a process and structure to allow us to do this on a more efficient way? And I think those are the kind of, like, two challenges, especially, like, within my role that I'll juggle with.
And I suppose that's where those senior hires come in, right? And they implement that process.
But this is the thing, though. It's like, it's not, I don't think the onus is just on them. I think this is where, like, startups, again, they will hire people with experience to do that, you know, and they will champion you doing that. Mm-hmm. They'll champion you doing that. And it's a good way for you to add value to a business, right? I came in and we're doing some good stuff. I added structure and it got better, it got more efficient. So we're able to do more quicker. So again, it makes you look a lot better within an organization, whether it's you want to grow in that organization or you want to go and, you know, go into another department in the organization or go to another team. Like, it also always raises your profile if you're able to go in and create processes.
Amazing. On the flip side of that, what would you say is the most rewarding thing about being a marketer?
For me, seeing a business grow. So the last organization I was at, I think they went from like 40 employees. In the 2 years when I left, there were 100 employees. Wow. You know, like, revenue, everything had kind of grown, right? So again, it's like you seeing the impact that your organization has on its customer base. And a lot of the organizations that I work at, they do good work and they care about not only their employees, their clients. So you're able to do more for more people as in your employees, but then the business is able to do more for their clients as well. And you see the result of that. You know, you're going to get people like, oh, I saw your campaign or whatever, or people like, oh, like your company, your organization is doing a great work. So I think for me, that's rewarding, you know, seeing the impact that the organization can have.
Okay, sick. And just in terms of like the digital marketing manager role, you know, it sounds like you got to wear many hats. Could you like shed light on what you can expect to earn in terms of like a salary?
The bag. So like if you're looking at a really small company, really small organization, you're looking at 35 to 40, which again...
Thousand. Yeah, thousand. Just to be clear, yeah. Not 35 to 40 pounds.
So again, you're looking at probably like 3 to 4 years experience. You're going to be on that, right? You're looking at more than 5 years experience, that's going to jump to like 50 very easily, 50 to 60. Kind of more than 5-6 years experience, then you're looking at 60 to 80. Again, it really just depends on the roles and responsibilities of that job. Like, are you a line manager? Are they doing like some really big projects that you have experience? So again, like if a company's, like if I'm approached by a company and I'm very happy where I am. if I was approached by a company, they're like, oh, look, like we're looking to get a new website and, you know, it's going to be a big undertaking, the project costs X. I've done 6 of those, right? So if you want me with my experience and my connections, yeah, you put some more money on the table, right?
I hear that.
You know, and that's kind of how it is. I think as well, education plays a part in it. I think at a certain level, you're going to want to have a degree, or you're going to want to have like your Chartered Institute of Marketing qualifications and other things. That's another kind of bargaining point. And again, like where the organization size is important, like how much they're making, like that. This is all public knowledge, by the way. So guys, when you're negotiating your salaries, you're looking at jobs, know what the company's doing and kind of look at kind of what space they're in, because that
do they have bread to pay
you? Yeah, like do they have the money to pay you? Because I've had jobs where like this is a perfect job, but they just don't have the money.
Yeah.
It's up to me to say yes or no, right? Yeah. So yeah, I think that, yeah, again, it can be very lucrative in terms of, you know, what you're doing. You can always take work on the side. So again, if there's like, if your friend's got a podcast, you know, and they need your help, or just, yeah, other people with smaller businesses, or just like whether it's can you write my marketing plan for me, or like what should my social media strategy be? These are things that you can do on the side. I think for me, I'm looking at what the next stage is. So that's what's going to be interesting. Like, oh, like after you've done this, and I've been a digital marketing manager now for a couple of years, you know, what is next? Like, for a marketing manager, what
is it?
So I think for me, two things, becoming a like CMO, so chief marketing officer, or becoming a consultant. Like, how do I work with, you know, these lovely, quirky scale up startup companies who've just got some funding or who've just kind of launched their product? Like, how do I help them create that strategy that's going to help them grow?
Yeah.
How do I help them create the processes behind it? How do I recommend the right agencies, the right people in the business? What should they be considering, and how do they kind of grow that out? And it's something that like I've never really like actually like properly deeped, but like I've always worked in startup and I've always enjoyed it, because you have so much flexibility and autonomy. Like there's no one's telling you how to fix the problem. They're paying you to fix the problem and they're supporting you to do that. And that's what I love about kind of, oh, like, if I'm a chief marketing officer at a startup company, this is what it looked like. But also if I'm a consultant helping various startup companies, using my experience and my connections, is something I can go in there and do some really good work.
To anybody potentially looking to get into the marketing or digital marketing space, what advice would you have for them?
So you don't have to go to university to be a marketer. Like let's just get that out there. You do, however, need some skills that university will help you to acquire. So attention to detail is very big. So when you're writing content, are you making spelling mistakes? Is your content accurate? Does it look great, right? So basic knowledge of Canva, Photoshop, all those kind of tools will help. But also, like, don't put typos in stuff. I've learned the hard way. Time management, prioritization skills, ability to create content. So that's whether you're own, whether you know you're really good at the camera, like photography, whether you're good on Photoshop, whatever, like all that kind of stuff is great. Having an interest in tech is helpful, because again, that helps with the platforms that you use, right? So I'm able to code in HTML5 and CSS. So when it comes to making changes to the website, we don't always have to pay someone to do it. If it's like minor, I can do it. And having a general knowledge and passion for the industry that you want to work in. So every industry is different. I've always worked in tech. I'm passionate about tech, right? But I have friends that work in music or sports, right? So again, when it comes to your wider industry knowledge and your personas and like what the industry needs, you're very aware of that because you operate in that industry. You think that industry, you live and breathe it. So again, I'd say, like, would I go be a marketer in the beauty industry? Probably not, because I don't have enough knowledge about it. However, could I be a marketer in tech or sports? Yes, I could, because I'm so passionate about it. I read about it for fun. So generally having conversations and creating content for me is a lot easier.
You've made work play.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, what you have to do. I think those are kind of the core skills that you kind of need as a marketer. And again, like I said, you don't necessarily have to have a degree, but you just need those core skills to help you along the way.
Understood. Ayo, this has been a great episode. Typically, we would do a quick fire round, but I'm being told by production that we need to wrap up. So we're going to finish with our question that I like to ask everybody at the end of the podcast. You know, based on everything that you've done and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 16-year-old self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
I would have worked. So I would have left school and gone to sales early. Like, sales is such a it's such an intangible skill in business, and it can be applied to every single area of business, whether it's accounts, HR, finance, so on and so forth. So I would have like tried to go into sales and learn the practical skills of like getting up, being on time to work, all those kind of like, this is what the real world is kind of stuff. You know, go to uni and learn the other things. Like, how do I learn to articulate myself? How do I learn to turn ideas into like something that's actually like material, whether it's content, a business report, so on and so forth. And then I would have taken that and applied that into work, having some form of foundation of this is what work is, this is what education is, and like this is how you marry it together. And again, like just encouraging myself, like again, like the doors that you face aren't always going to be doors. They might just be platforms. Like, how do you turn the door into a platform kind of thing, where it's like, okay, cool. Well, once I break through, how do I tell my story and bring others along with me? And again, like having a focus of, oh, who came before me and how can they help me? I'm fortunate enough to have loads of mentors in my life who have not necessarily been in marketing, but they've been in industry for a while. So they teach me how, and I've learned how to navigate certain scenarios, which has actually helped me, whether I don't have to learn effectively from my own like downfall or my own, like on my own back, I've kind of learned off theirs. And it's definitely helped me and pushed me in the right direction. And don't like, yeah, don't silo yourself. Like, it's about business. It's not just about marketing. So again, like, yeah, if you want to be a marketeer and end up as a marketeer, learn all the other business functions and learn how to be a well-rounded like professional, because you never know where an opportunity might take you. You know, you might become a CEO one day and you don't want to think about marketing. You want to think about the money that's coming in and the money that's going out. You'd want to think about, you know, like your HR process and various other things. So yeah, these are the kind of things that, you know, I would tell myself if I was a 16-year-old.
Amazing. Ayo, thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Your time today, man. This has been great, guys. This has been another episode of What Your Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.
Cheers, and thanks for having me.